From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The crew of the State Ferry Matanuska has been cleared after everyone was tested for COVID-19, Alaska Marine Highway System officials said today. State officials say all 47 swabs came back negative on Sunday. That's following a report that at least five passengers tested positive after riding the ferry from Cake to Juneau on August 10th. The mainline ferry is in Bellingham, Washington, after last Friday's sailing was canceled. Service will resume on August 21st when the ferry returns north to Ketchikan. Taking a look at the City and Borough of Juneau's Emergency Operations Center's COVID dashboard. Latest numbers for COVID-19, 34 residents have active cases of COVID-19 and 15 non-residents have active cases. Just hours before polls were to open, the State Division of Elections announced there would be no polling places in six rural Alaska villages for today's primary election. Instead, the state said late Monday that voters will be offered the opportunity to vote absentee in person today. The division said the changes were made due to concerns over COVID-19, last-minute changes in poll workers. Voters in Arctic Village, Port Lyons, Cake, Takotna, Nunamiqua will instead vote in either city or tribal offices. Voters in Cold Bay will also vote elsewhere, but the division didn't immediately indicate a location. For many parents, sending their kids to school gives them a break from child care while they're at work. That relief is not coming when school begins next week in Juneau because local education officials decided to keep kids at home over pandemic concerns. School officials hope to resume in-person classes gradually, but it's unclear when. Some local policymakers are at their wits' end, searching for childcare fixes, while some parents are getting creative. A few weeks ago, a Juneau parent started a Facebook group, Parents COVID Network Juneau, to connect families navigating the pandemic. More than 200 people have joined. Some of the threads in the group read like swap meet conversations or personal ads. For example, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I'm in Auk Bay. I'm open to different schedules and would like to trade days or parts of days so I can get a good chunk of work time. Three families sound good to me. It's matchmaking, but for small COVID-19 learning bubbles in childcare. It's also the sort of creative community solution that school officials were hoping would spring up. They were also hoping for some formal policy solutions. During recent forums with parents, Superintendent Bridget Weiss mentioned the recommendations to come from the city's Economic Stabilization Task Force several times. Laura Martinson delivered those much-anticipated recommendations to the Juneau Assembly on August 10th. Here's how Martinson wrapped up.
The most important outcome from our fact-finding group has been that we really are requesting the Assembly direct city staff to come up with a strategy to approach this. It's becoming more and more apparent that this needs to be a full-time coordinated position.
Assembly members Lauren Jones and Wade Bryson more or less interpreted that as, you figure it out. They had both served on a committee that spent months studying childcare and crafting a policy to increase availability pre-pandemic. Here's Lauren Jones.
And then here we're going to look at just telling staff to come up with a comprehensive solution to a short-term problem that's almost impossible to fix.
He mentioned a child care provider subsidy the Assembly started that targeted preschool kids. Now, hundreds more elementary school kids are in the mix because of distance learning.
And now we think in a month and a half, we can hire somebody and stand up something that would triple or quadruple the amount of capacity we have today in order for schools to operate and maybe for 6 months. It does not make any sense to me to burden the staff with everything else to do that.
Wade Bryson said there's no model for pop-up childcare that makes business sense. He also described it as a, quote, almost impossible problem.
What the school district said to us is we cannot safely bring large groups of students together, go put them in childcare, and now our idea is figure out where can we put large groups of children to house them in childcare, because parents will need to go to work.
Then Bryson made a point that there already are taxpayer-funded facilities specifically for kids.
I would almost suggest that we have a whole bunch of small buildings conveniently placed around the city, and we just use the schools for child care. They're already designed for children. They already have restrooms in them. If we're not going to put the kids into the buildings that we design for the children, what buildings are we going to put them in?
The rest of the Assembly was more optimistic. Over Jones and Bryson's objections, the Assembly went with a task force recommendation to direct city staff to look into a comprehensive childcare strategy. City Manager Rory Watt said if the Assembly wants to consider using school buildings for childcare, it should meet with the Juneau School Board.
there is a needle to be threaded, and I'm not underestimating the task. There's definitely a facility problem. There's a scale of number of kids that need child care problem. And it may be that some use of school facilities is the best option in terms of facility space. This is going to be hard all the way along.
While Assemblymember Lauren Jones was skeptical of figuring out a comprehensive solution, he said he was interested in a targeted approach for lower-income families. A sexual harassment lawsuit brought by a former police officer against the city of Sitka has settled out of court for over $500,000. Mary Ferguson says she'll continue pushing for change at the Sitka Police Department. Her settlement includes a provision allowing her to conduct an independent investigation into police management practices. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
In October 2018, Mary Ferguson filed suit against the city, alleging she'd been sexually harassed and discriminated against in the workplace. At the time, she was the only woman working as an officer for the Sitka Police Department. Her case settled out of court on August 14th, and Ferguson will walk away with $515,000. But her feelings around the settlement are complicated.
You know, I kind of have mixed emotions about it. I want to be optimistic about, you know, the city doing something about all these complaints that have been still occurring. At the same time, I get feeling a little bit hopeless because there have been so many people that have come forward, and it just doesn't feel like anything is getting resolved.
Ferguson's is the third suit brought by a former Sitka police employee that has been settled in recent months. Another detective, Ryan Silva, settled a whistleblower suit with the city last December for over $300,000. Earlier this year, Noah Shepard, a former jailer and officer trainee, settled his harassment suit for $30,000. The spate of settlements did not put an end to the complaints, however. In July, former dispatcher Allison Kirby published a lengthy letter on social media alleging racial bias in the department. Kirby told KCAW that although she had no plans to take legal action, racial bias remains an issue the current administration has not solved. Ferguson, on the other hand, had hoped to take her case all the way to trial.
You know, the lawsuit, you know, certainly raised a little bit of awareness, but it didn't do enough to make anything really actionable. The thing that I'm missing out on by settling this case is I don't get to go before a jury, and I don't get to have my evidence presented.
Ferguson's attorney, Jim Davis, with the Northern Justice Project, says her case was strong enough to go to trial.
She had complained about sexual harassment, and nothing was done. She had complained about misconduct within the police department, and as a result of all of that, she was demoted from detective to night patrol for no other reason except she was, quote, hard to get along with, end quote. So it was a pretty strong case.
Even so, Davis says the settlement is a good outcome for Ferguson. It's not clear where a jury would have landed.
And in this era where people are more aware of the evils of gender discrimination and sexual harassment, a jury could have been super, super irate at the police department for doing this to Mary. On the other hand, you know, maybe a lot of Sitka juries were thinking, we don't want to penalize the police department because we have to finance the police department. And so do we really want to award Mary $10 million if we're going to have to pay more taxes?
So since Ferguson won't see justice before a jury, she's putting her hopes on the second part of the settlement, which allows her to pay for an independent investigation into the police department, a circumstance which Davis says is very rare.
I would say it's extraordinarily unusual. I haven't seen it, and I've been practicing law for almost 30 years now. I haven't seen any case where one absolutely essential part of the settlement.
Retired Alaska Superior Court Judge Eric Smith has agreed to spearhead the investigation. Davis says the work could cost Ferguson between $10,000 and $30,000. And while the investigator won't be able to force anyone to speak with him or subpoena any depositions or documents, he will talk to whomever is willing and review any documents provided to him. KCAW spoke with City Attorney Brian Hansen, who says the city admits no fault as a result of the settlement, and he says that the city did not, quote, sanction or approve an investigation in the settlement agreement, but it did acknowledge that Ferguson may conduct her own private investigation, a right he says is afforded to any citizen.
All we've said that we would do is not interfere with that investigation, and that's what we would do or not do with anybody who started an investigation is that we will not interfere.
And though Hansen says the city isn't obligated to give Smith access to records that he can't legally acquire through the Public Records Act, like personnel files, he says city staff are complying with the investigation.
So we've already had contact with Judge Smith and told our employees that if they want to speak with Judge Smith, they're more than welcome to do so. In fact, I think Chief Beatty is encouraging employees to do so.
Ferguson says she will limit her interactions with the investigator, and she hopes to get participation from as many people as possible.
This isn't just about me. This is about everybody. I'm welcoming, you know, even the parties to my lawsuit. I hope that they participate in this investigation.
She'll provide that investigation to the Sitka Assembly with the hopes that they'll use it to take action. Ferguson says just because the case is settled, that doesn't mean she's finished.
Like, this is not over. Because I'm not going to have a jury trial, and the city gave me some money and agreed to not stand in my way, it doesn't mean things are over. No, if the investigation reveals that there needs to be further action, I will be right there supporting that further action.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
An Alaska tribal group has filed a lawsuit against state officials that claims the commercial fishing permit system unfairly prevents local anglers from fishing on their traditional grounds. Alaska's Energy Desk reported the lawsuit filed by the Metlakatla Indian community asks a federal judge to prevent the state from requiring commercial fishing permits for tribal members. The state named Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy and other administration officials in the lawsuit that says the tribe's fishing rights are guaranteed by Congress. If Metlakatla residents want to fish in nearby state waters, the state says they need a permit. And finally, a bald eagle launched an aerial assault on a drone operated by the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy, which is known as Eagle, ripping off a propeller and sending the aircraft into Lake Michigan. The department says the attack happened on July 21st when the drone was mapping shoreline erosion near Escanaba in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Drone pilot Hunter King says he had completed about 7 minutes of the mapping flight when satellite reception became spotty and the drone began to twirl. King and two birdwatchers saw the eagle flying away, apparently unhurt. Tracking data indicates the drone landed in the lake, about 150 feet offshore. It has not been found. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.